Welcome to Computing Lives, a podcast from the IEEE Annals of the History of Computing. The microprocessor is one of the central inventions of the 20th century. In this podcast, we'll explore the origins of that device. This podcast has four parts. The first is called What Constitutes Invention? By the mid to late 1960s, technological conditions were favorable for the development of a microprocessor, a small computer, on a chip. The increase in the scale of integration made it possible to place ever more elements of a computer circuit onto a single chip, leading engineers to speculate about the building of a complete computer on such a chip. Federico Fagan, who led the engineering work on the 4004 project at Intel, acknowledged this fact. By the mid-1960s, people were building single-board microcomputers using MSI, medium-scale integration, as a side function. It didn't take geniuses to figure out that this pattern of continuing integration and combining functions was going to happen. To people in the art and inside the industry, it was a natural thing to do. The question was, when will we have the technology that will allow it economically? Work on microprocessors were occurring at several different places, at the Intel Corporation, at SRI, at IBM, and at RCA. Additional experiments were being conducted at Fairchild, Rockwell, General Instruments, and Texas Instruments at roughly the same time, although it's not clear that any of these organizations were aware of what the others were doing. A similar idea was also being discussed at Sharp Corporation in Japan. The economic climate was starting to become favorable to the development of the microprocessor. In a thoughtful and widely read review article, Intel President Robert Noyce made his case. By the late 1960s, he wrote, the semiconductor industry was becoming aware of a serious design problem. The complexity of random logic designs was increasingly steady. If this continued, the number of circuits needed would proliferate beyond the available supply of circuit designers. At the same time, the relative usage of each circuit would fall. Integrated circuit cost-effectiveness would suffer. Increased design cost and diminished usage would prevent manufacturers from amortizing the costs over a large population, and it would cut off the advantages of a learning curve. Noyce, together with one of his designers, Martian Hoff, who is often known as Ted Hoff, went on to argue that the microprocessor was a very necessary invention, and that its rapid acceptance was in many ways predetermined. In fact, technical and economic forces set a context for the development of the microprocessor, but it was human choices by the semiconductor manufacturers, system manufacturers, users, and perhaps a few others, that really shaped the technology. In fact, Hoff and Noyce suggest some of the alternative approaches that might have been taken to solve this techno-economic problem, such as computer-aided design, for example, discretionary wiring, and maybe master slicing. Although it's little known outside Japan, one important line in the story of the microprocessor's development began with electrical engineer Tadashi Sasaki. Sasaki was born in 1915 in Taiwan, but grew up in Japan. In 1938, he graduated from Kyoto University with a distinguished record and a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering. He worked for a short time on circuit design at the Electrotechnical Laboratory, a preeminent research laboratory sponsored by the Ministry of Telecommunications, before moving to the aircraft manufacturer Kawanashi Kyogyo, which was integrated into Kobe Kogyo after World War II and absorbed by Fujitsu in 1963. Sasaki worked on anti-radar devices during World War II for Kobe Kyogyo's vacuum tube division. Dr. Sasaki, who received his Ph.D. in electrical engineering from Kyoto University in 1961, remained with Fujitsu until 1964, serving in research and management positions of increasing responsibility. During his years with Kobe Kogyo, Sasaki was a leader establishing the Japanese semiconductor industry. He met John Bardeen on a tour of Bell Laboratories in 1946. During 1947, just before Bardeen and his co-workers invented the transistor, Sasaki had several communications with Bardeen about the limits of miniaturization vacuum tubes. As Sasaki explained it, while he worked to make the distance between the grid and the cathode progressively smaller, Bardeen made the conceptual leap to embed the grid in the cathode, which resulted in the point contact transistor. Bardeen personally sent Sasaki news of his invention within a few weeks after it occurred. Sasaki recognized the significance of Bardeen's contribution and promptly initiated a research program at Kobe Kogyo on transistors, later supported by the Ministry of International Trade and Industry. Leo Osaki, who won the 1973 Nobel Prize for Physics for his research on semiconductors, was the first researcher to work on transistors under Sasaki's direction. In 1962, the British company, Sumlock Computer, began manufacturing a desktop calculator known as the Comptometer Mark IV, which became a major commercial success in Japan. Japanese companies were struggling to make calculators using vacuum tube components, and spurred by this foreign threat, Sasaki sought to replace vacuum tube components in Japanese calculators with transistors. At the time, Kobe Kogyo was supplying electronic components to Sharp Corporation, a leading manufacturer of domestic appliances. Sasaki persuaded Sharp, which had no experience in the calculator business, to send several of its young engineers back to the university for additional training in computing as a first step towards entering the semiconductor-driven calculator business. Because of management restructuring within Fujitsu, Sasaki decided to leave for a senior management position at Sharp in 1964. His arrival at Sharp coincided with the return of the engineers from the university where they had received their extra computer training. Unlike Kobe Kogyo, Sharp was in a financial position to provide adequate development funds, and Sasaki was able to put the engineering staff to work developing semiconductor-based calculator products. He believed that if he could replace the large mechanical calculators then in common usage with smaller electronic ones, the new calculators might find a market in the home and build on Sharp's experience in domestic electrical appliances. Under Sasaki's sponsorship, Sharp soon produced the world's first transistorized calculator. Sasaki closely monitored the U.S. semiconductor industry with the intention of serving both his own company and the entire Japanese electronics industry. He observed the U.S. move from small to medium-scale integration and persuaded several of his Japanese colleagues to follow suit. He argued, with less success, for the move from bipolar to majority carrier devices. In what seems to be a characteristically Japanese management style, Sasaki used an analogy to explain, and partly to justify, his preference for single-carrier devices. At the time, the Sharp Corporation hired many, many young girls for the assembly operation, for production. Sharp Corporation had built many dormitories for several-person occupancy. They also built housing complexes for married couples. Then I realized that what is more efficient and cost-effective is the singles dormitories. They're much better than the couples' dormitories because in the case of the singles dormitory, you don't have to think up any design. It's very simple. You don't have to worry about any separations between them. And I put that idea into semiconductor devices. People have used the P-N junction, and they've had to put some insulator with it. It's no good for the future miniaturization of devices. So I recommended utilizing the single type of transistor structure without an insulator. In 1966, Sharp began work on the P-channel MOS technology, which it learned about from a technical report prepared by the Fairchild Semiconductor Company. 2 years later, Sasaki began to worry that calculators built with the P-channel MOS technology would consume too much power for battery operation and would operate too slowly. So he introduced work on complementary metal oxide semiconductor technology in his company. However, this created a new problem. Too great a percentage of the power was being consumed by the display unit. In response, he initiated what turned out to be one of the first and most successful research programs in liquid crystal displays. Sasaki's role in the development of the microprocessor came about as a part of his effort to keep Sharp at the forefront of the Japanese calculator business. During the mid-1960s, every 2 years, the number of chips required to make a calculator was halved because of the rapid pace at which semiconductor scale of integration was progressing. As a result, Sharp anticipated product life cycles for calculators of 2 years or less. By 1968, some calculators were being built from as few as 4 chips. Projecting a continuation of this trend, Sasaki organized a series of brainstorming sessions with about 10 of his engineers and circuit designers to plan for the future generations of calculators. Most of the engineers suggested an incremental increase in the overall functionality of the calculators by taking advantage of the increasing scale of integration to continue to put more on each chip. Sasaki rejected this idea, simply the kind of conservative thinking that is ingrained by the Japanese university system, to make incremental extensions rather than technological leaps. However, one member of the team, a Ms. Murikami, who was a software engineering researcher who had recently graduated from Otani University in Kyoto, focused instead on increasing the functionality of individual chips. Noting the reduction in the number of chips needed to build a calculator over the previous several years, she suggested that if the trend continued, the number would decrease to 2, then 1, then a fractional number. What she meant by a fractional number is not entirely clear, but it does seem she meant that the calculator comprised multiple functional units and that one could divide a chip into multiple regions, placing in each region a complete functional unit with buffers to bypass. This leads one to emphasize the implementation of an entire functional unit, such as a central processing unit, on a single chip or even a portion thereof. Thus, while the other Sharp engineers focused on the functionality of the calculator, Murakami focused on the functionality of the chip. Sasaki likened her suggestions, but the other engineers did not find particular value in it. Sasaki made his decision on the future research direction in a customary Japanese way, on the basis of majority opinion, which he later acknowledged to be a mistake. He did arrange for the company's shops to experiment with a program he called Components on Silicon, but the major thrust of research was along the lines of the majority opinion, without any particular effort to build a complete central processing unit on a chip. However, Sasaki would not readily let go of the idea of the fractional chip. The U.S. manufacturer Rockwell had an exclusive contract to supply the semiconductor devices Sharp used in its appliances. Sharp was an important customer to Rockwell, and there were mature working relations between them. Sasaki asked Rockwell to produce these 4-division chips, but Rockwell refused, according to Sasaki, because Rockwell was already earning high profits with its other semiconductor devices and did not want this distraction. In 1968, in the first several months after Intel was founded, Noyce visited Sasaki at the Sharp offices in Nara, Japan, hoping to sell Intel's manufacturing semiconducting devices to Sharp. Sasaki felt beholden to Noyce because of the important use he had made of Noyce's earlier results at Fairchild on planar-type semiconductor devices. So he asked Rockwell if it would allow Intel, a new and struggling firm, to produce a small percentage of Sharp's semiconductors. Again, Rockwell refused, pointing to its exclusivity agreement with Sharp. At that point, Sasaki decided to take entrepreneurial action behind the scenes. Yoshio Kojima was the president of a young and unproven calculator company named Bizicom, short for Business Computer, that was experiencing some financial problems. He and Sasaki had graduated from the same university department, although at different times. And university ties being strong in Japan, Sasaki did not want to see Kojima's business fail. Sasaki had previously given technical advice to Bizicom, which is permissible in Japanese business culture since Bizicom was small and posed no serious threat to Sharp. Thus, he decided, surreptitiously, to provide 40 million yen to Kojima with the stipulation that Bizicom would front a contract with Intel to manufacture the 4-division chip. The funding was used to pay for the development contract with Intel that led to the development of the 4004 microprocessor. You've been listening to Computing Lives. This is the first part of a four-part installment about the invention of the 4004 Intel microprocessor. It's based on an essay that was written by Bill Asprey that appeared in Volume 19, Number 3 of the Annals of the History of Computing. More about the Annals and the other publications of the Computer Society can be found at www.computer.org. To find the Annals, click on the Publications tab and go to Technical Magazines. Other Computer Society podcasts can be found at www.computer.org/podcasts, and that will include the subsequent issues of this podcast. If you have any comments, you can send them to podcast@computer.org. The music for this podcast came from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network, which you can find at music.podshow.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.